Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome to episode 12 of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Chris Chavez here with Mitch Kastoff. As Alex Lohr cannot be with us, his wife is 39 weeks pregnant and will not be able, and was feeling under the weather. So, baby comes first. This is episode 12, so we tied Sarah Koenig and Serial for number of episodes. So, and this will be the season one finale. On today's show, we're gonna talk about a little bit about Tyson Gay and his new coaching move. Mo Farah and the half marathon that he just won earlier today in Lisbon. Then, as the page turns to outdoor season, we'll discuss some matchups we were really looking forward to. Next week, we've got some track action with Jeremy Warner, another 800 talk with David Disha, and then World Cross Country preview to close out the first season. So, yeah, before we even get to that, March Madness has kicked off. Mitch, how's your bracket doing?
Pretty much like how it does every year. A lot of really high hopes and then extremely poor. So I'm going to be honest, I did not have time to fill one out this year, and I just used Nate Silver's bracket predictor. So I didn't really make anything individualized. I just kind of shot for the average. Set the bar low. It's tattooed on my my left ribcage.
There was an interesting tweet that was put out this week by, I believe it was New Jersey New York Track Club, where they said, what would happen if we assembled a field of 62, or 64, I'm sorry, runners, each to run a mile in a NCAA-style tournament? Of course, there would be upsets. There would be, you know, one seeds that are the top 4 milers from the previous year. So, Mitch, if we had that type of system, what would you be... What would interest you the most about that, and who would you take as your miler in the NCAA tournament of miles? Even though it's not NCAA, it's professional, everyone.
Here's something you might not know about me, is that I've watched velodrome racing before. So, like, indoor, well, not outdoor, too. Two cyclists on the track, banked, and you should, if you haven't seen it, watch it. They basically just go as slow as possible for 9/10 of the race, and then one makes a move, and then they go all out for a lap, and that's basically the whole race. So with that in mind, yeah, that's what I like to see in this. Shout out to Lenny Nelson, King Bay, at King Bay Nelson. Dude put together a image file of the top 64 milers. I will say this, only knock, I don't know if all the information is correct, because... Or if he did it off recent info, but it's a lot of work for a guy who just seemed like a fan. It's super sweet. We'll be sure to include it in somewhere that you can see it.
Yeah, we'll embed it into the post.
But yeah, just have people go head to head. You know, jog a few, sprint a few. I would actually watch that for a while if it's like horse racing. Just get kind of drunk and bet and watch people jog 1500 meters and then sprint 100. Or maybe a little more. Who knows?
That would be, yeah. I didn't see who the last couple guys in were that in for that tournament. But, you know, it'd be really cool to see if it was, let's say, a high school kid. High school kid, I mean, it's like a 16 seed versus a 1 seed, you know, going up against a professional. Let's say Grant Fisher versus Matt Centrowitz in the first round. So many people would be behind Grant Fisher to pull off the upset. You know, anything can happen. I don't think a 16 seed will ever down a 1 seed, like in the actual NCAA tournament. In something like this, I would take the guys that go through rounds the best, and you know they're coming off of 2012. Leo Manzano, that's my pick, and you'll doubt him going into the tournament. He's like a 3 seed that goes on to win it all, because you know he's not always the top guy. So you can't be a 1 seed, but he's always up. He's up there. He's an Olympian. So I'd take Liam Manzano in a tournament like this, and absolutely sit and kick is the way to do it.
I feel like a guy like I wanted to go Weeding. I think he was like a 5 seed, which is it bodes kind of well for him. I feel like that's a good spot. But I would just feel like a guy either they're in opposite brackets, but a Will Lear or Jordan McNamara.
Yeah.
I just feel like they have the best 100 meter speed, and so. You know, they don't have to run that hard, just have to really sprint all out. And so, though, I mean, you can probably just pick Centro because he looks like he's trying the least, so.
guys like Matt Elliott and, like, Ford Palmer would sneak in there with, like, deceiving personal bests, would surprise you come tournament time. So, yeah, props to NJNYTC for throwing that out there. And, yeah, it's a nice topic of discussion.
So I want to get away from the court. Bring up some other March insanity. Definition of insanity is doing something over and whatever. You wrote something this week that was... You texted me before it went out, and I was pretty stunned. So what's going on with Tyson Gay?
Yeah, so that news... so I put it out there on Friday. Like, it was a weird time, too, because it was like a Friday afternoon news dump, like... It's one of those things where, you know, you have a news come out at like 5:30 and so everyone's getting off work and can't really ask too many questions. But yeah, I know something I was working on for a little while. Tyson Gay is now being coached by John Smith out in Los Angeles, and got that all confirmed and whatnot on Friday. So we'll see him during outdoor season under a new coach. And it's interesting because John Smith's produced some really good sprinters. Like, he's coached Maurice Green. He's coached Audibold and Carmelita DeJetter, most recently taken under English Gardner. So it's an interesting move. Especially it's nice to see someone like John Smith, I guess, open his doors to, you know, someone like Tyson Gay and see what he has left. And, you know, he went through this 1-year suspension, but he's back. You know, the sport has its moments with athletes that have served time, and they come back, and sometimes they can do something special. So that was it's an interesting move, and it's John Smith's group is primarily Nike athletes. Tyson Gay used to be an Adidas athlete, so the question there that comes next is Tyson Gay going to be sponsored by Nike for 2015? As of right now, that's not confirmed. His agent, Mark Wetmore, said that there was no deal in place right now. Maybe some pictures here and there have popped up with Tyson wearing Nike gear. But, you know, that could always be going out, buying a dry fit for a workout when you're unsponsored. So will we see Tyson Gay in a Nike uniform? Maybe. I would kind of lean towards yes at this point. But not confirmed yet. There hasn't been any official release by any party for that. But yeah, Tyson Gay news right before the outdoor season, leaving Florida for Los Angeles. But let's talk about an athlete that is running for Nike right now, and he had a good weekend. Mo Farah runs 59:32 on Sunday morning. A little too early for me to catch the race live, but knocked off 20 seconds from the European record.
He knocked off the previous European record was 59:43. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was 59:52. Yeah, there was one in 98, but it wasn't record eligible.
Right. So it was impressive because, you know, he takes down this field with... There was 6 guys who have run under 60 in the field, and he hadn't done it yet. I liked it. It's a solid performance. It's a great indicator of his fitness coming into 2015. He's looking good to defend those world championship medals. At this point, Mo Farah is good. That's not breaking news to anyone. So what I got out of that is, you know, 2016 we talked about Mo Farah in the marathon, and he's got those marathon plans pushed off until after then. I guess the half marathon world record is something that gets thrown into conversation now. He's a little bit far off from it. You know, there's a bunch of 58 guys, and he's not there yet. Mitch, what do you kind of take out of this performance? Would you put him in the conversation for a world record hunt in next year?
Oof. In the half, I don't know. It's funny because that's a really good mark. Zenese Tedese. He can't put it together in the marathon, but he can put it together in the half. And world records, they're just so fast. But I will say, and we have said in previous podcasts, that Mo's a winner. Let's just put it like that. But his PRs are, they're stellar, yes, but they're not on the same level as his winning conversation, as his trophy closet, per se. So what I want him to see, I think he, it's hard because I've, who's Athletics Weekly? Hold on. I don't remember his name.
Jason Henderson?
Yeah, thank you very much. Jason Henderson. First guy to run sub 3:30 and 15, 13 flat in the 5K, 27 in the 10K, and an hour in the half marathon. So the reason I got stumbled up there is because I was going to say, you know, I don't know if you can run a fast 5K, but then I forget that he ran that blazing 1500. And then I'm like, well, I don't know. Is his 10K really his thing? And then I contradict everything I just said previously because he just ran a pretty quick half marathon. So I want him to run a quick 5. I think he can run a better 10, something in the 26-20 range. The 5, I don't know. It's hard for me to conceive him running something like under 12:45. But he's surprised me before. And I will say this, the guy, and I'm going to take the high road here, which is a rarity for me, but the guy who came out the worst from this race is Andy Vernon, because this field was pretty stacked. Mo took it to him. So I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to present that without comment, and you just let it live.
Right, yeah, because Kogo from Kenya actually was just a second behind him and was charging right at the finish line. From the highlights, it was a really great race right until the very end, but I don't think anything beats Mo Farah versus Bekele at the Great North Run 2 years ago. That was one epic race. I think it's panning out to be, it's going to look like a successful summer for the Oregon Project as of right now, if Galen's healthy again, Centrowitz is in awesome shape. What's a successful summer for the Oregon Project in your book?
The group's just basically just based on medals. And so I hate to make it something that where the podium is only so big, but that's what their goal is. They do like to run fast, but they're all about the hardware. So
it's something like, you know how right before the Olympics, the Team USA will say like, yeah, you know, we're going for at least 30 golds or, you know, in track. It's like the Oregon Project has its own, it could be its own category. They'll take home more golds than some countries. Like, I'd actually have to go back to Moscow 2013 and see where the Oregon Project itself would fall on that medal count if it was its own country. But yeah, another successful summer ahead probably for Alberto Salazar and his crew. Outdoor matchups that you're looking forward to the most from, I guess on the American side, we'll start off, because to tie this all together, I would like to see Mo versus Galen in a straight-up race, like a 10K, just because, you know, Mo's trying to drop his personal best a little bit more. Galen's got the upper hand now, so I would love to see them possibly at something like Pre, where they run the 10K again. That's just an outdoor matchup between them, but on the U.S. side, I'm excited for outdoor season in the hurdles, because, you know, we haven't seen so many of these stars during indoor season. We saw maybe David Oliver race a couple times, and then we had all these other stars. I want to see Aries Merritt return. I want to see how Devin Allen does from his comeback. And, you know, Jason Richardson, always a guy that's in contention during a world championship year. You know, there was a stunner in 2013 when we had Wilson just be the U.S. champion out of nowhere. So the hurdles is a really exciting event. I'm looking forward to Drake relays where they all get to go head to head. Mitch, what's enticing to you this outdoor season?
It's funny because I had the hurdles penciled in, and because Laura's in here to give the easy, 5K mile, whatever. I'm gonna go women's 400. Francina McCrory, Sonia, Courtney Okolo, the rest of the Texas crew, Kendall Bazin, you got Natasha Hastings, Phyllis Francis, maybe like an Allison Felix. That in itself, I'm pretty sure, and I would go back and look to confirm, but I'm gonna just take a good guess here, is that the three I just mentioned had the top three times in the world last year. And so we talk about how the men's and women's hurdles team are the toughest team to make, and I still think they are. But I like to see this 400 matchup pan out. The distance races, yeah, they're always enticing to me. They're always going to be the thing I go to watch. But there's just something brewing in the quarter mile that I really like a lot.
The women's 800, too. I mean, Drake Relays is going to serve as sort of a... It could be a world championship in and of itself if the U.S. could put as many women on a team as possible, because, I mean, you'll have, like, five women, like, I forget who's on the start list, but, I mean, there's just all the U.S. stars at Drake Relays. It makes you kind of curious as to who's going to be at Penn Relays for the relays there, because the 4x8 world record goes down pretty much over the last couple of years when they assemble a squad. But the women's 800 at Drake Relays is going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to that because it's like you stack the field, and you're only going to see three of these women in China, so it's a little tough. But it's exciting. You'll see the stars. They're not ducking each other, and you'll see them all together on this in the same race.
So let's go from 800 to Penn. You also tweeted something out this weekend that is something I dream about probably every night when I go to sleep. And so do you want to share this happiness with the world?
Jeremy Warner, 800. It's happening. I wrote the story maybe 1 or 2 months ago. So, I mean, there was time for him to change his plan. But the plan is to open 2015 with an 800. So I thought I'd check back in with Jeremy. And he said, yep, it's a go. Next weekend, Texas State is where he's going to be making his 800 debut, passing up on potentially a really fast 400 to open the year at Texas Relays, or even running an 800 there. Just keep it low-key. No need to make too many headlines right away. But Jeremy Warner will be making his 800 debut next weekend. In the time that from the first time we discussed this to now, how has your prediction sort of changed? It's a little tough because there's nothing to go off of. He didn't run indoor season. We don't exactly know how his training's going. Are you still going to stick to your initial time?
I honestly don't even remember what I said.
Yeah, I remember was I said something like 147 or something like that, or maybe 145. I don't know. I'm leaning a little bit more towards 149, 150, just because of that, there wasn't an indoor season to base things off of. I don't know how his training's going. And in addition to that, when I spoke to him, he said, I still don't know how I'm going to run this one. So it's a little funny because, he's in this with just as many question marks as we are. So it's exciting. Well, let's talk about someone who thrives in the 800. David Rudisha, who's proven over time that he's probably one of the world's best. It's funny because while I tweeted out the update after staying up live, I put Olympic champion. I was so close to making the mistake of putting Olympic and world champion. He's coming back this year to try and defend to get back his world championship crown from Amos. David Rudisha opens with a 144 in Australia. It was an exciting race, actually. I was looking at the start list at first, and it was just, Australians, a couple Kenyans here, a Kenyan pacer. And I was like, yeah, he's just going to blow. It's going to be a time trial for him. No one's going to challenge him or anything like that. In the last lap, someone was on his heels, and it made it exciting, and especially the Australian crowd was probably going nuts. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I was wide awake right after watching the race. Mitch, what do you take out of Rudisha's early fitness? 144. It's not 142 or anything like that yet. 144.
I mean, good. He won. Yeah, that's a good time for him. Honestly, not too much, because Aspel Kiprop ran a 144.4 at some relay meet in Kenya. So, I mean, is it a step in the right direction? Oh, absolutely. I think it was Jeff Riesley who pushed him to the line. That guy is no slouch, and I would like to see him in some other Aussies. I don't want to make that mistake putting it together. So, oh, thank goodness. Australian. I didn't want to make that. I've done it once. I didn't want to make the mistake twice. But, yeah, it's a step in the right direction for him. Just get him there healthy. I will say this. If you haven't seen it, Nigel Amos, a.k.a. DJ Zorro, had a birthday party this weekend. His first one ever, which is good, because he deserves to have a birthday party. I guess he, you know, growing up in poverty, you don't get to have one, but then you become a world champion and you get to have one. He took this absurd all-white, like, Boys to Men R&B cover picture, and it had Caster Semenya, and it had Amante Mancho, who just got banned. So, a really weird scenario. I don't know what's going on. My biggest takeaway from the weekend is I learned that David Rudisha's dad's name was not actually Rudisha. Rudisha is German or Swahili for return. Read the article towards the bottom. It has it. That's why you should, you know, always read to the end, but don't read the comments. So that's really cool for him.
Yeah, so what Mitch is referring to here is an article from The Age, which is a media outlet out in Australia. David Rudisha is a Maasai warrior who, because he ran his world record, didn't have to slay a lion, which is one. It's like getting into a really cool club. All you have to do is you have to slay a lion. No easy task. But David Rudisha here, I'll read a piece from it really quick. To hunt the lion, the Maasai nominate one of their hunters as a sacrifice to lure out the lion. The hunter rings a bell loudly and constantly until an irritated lion attacks. The hunting party then moves in and kills the lion. If the bell ringer survives, he is venerated as a brave and lucky warrior. What if, by chance, you know, David Rudisha didn't pursue running and was going through this whole thing, and he was the sacrifice? Like, we would never have this world record holder. That's just really funny to me. But no, pretty badass that you don't have to slay a lion just because you ran 800 meters in 100 seconds. Check out that article. I'll try and link to it in the post on Sporting News. But yeah, pretty much that. There wasn't too much news that came out of this week. Oh, quick thing from Australia. If you haven't seen it yet, the finish line photo with Jeff C and Brett Robinson from the 5K at that same meet is pretty badass, because I think it's Brett Robinson just has his arm crossed in a tight race, which is a pretty gutsy call right at the very finish. Great finish line photo from him. Now, I guess that kind of does it. It's a really quick episode. We don't have lore, so we don't have three talking heads on this show. So coming up this week is World Cross Country. Mitch, what should we be looking out for?
It's going to be mud. I hate to just go the easy joke right there. But hopefully there'll be plenty of mud. Get really, really grueling out there. And so with the mud, you never know who's going to win. I will say the IAAF gave some shout-outs to my boy and everyone's favorite homeboy, Chris Derrick. He's good. He's good on cross. He's good in hay and bale. Can he win? I mean, I hope so. I'm pulling for him. But there's a bunch of other guys who are really, really good. Bedan Karaoke. I'm not going to apologize for that butchering. He's really good at cross country. I think he ran 13:15. He's a sub 27:10 guy. He's only 24 years old. Then you have the whole Ethiopian team. Mukhtar Edris.
He's
really good. Albert Rapp out of Bahrain. A guy named Hagos Gebrewit. If you hear him, he's pretty good at running. Yep. So Chris and the rest of Team USA have their hands full. Will they see silver? Oh, I don't know. That'd be sweet. I will try and stay up for this one. If you can, people have their qualms about cross country. Some think it's the greatest sport on earth. Some think it should die so a track can live, and so on. I just think it's a really cool event. It's just there's something about going somewhere and running around and just screaming at people as they are just going through such miserable conditions. So I applaud people that run it. My last day in college when I finished my career, it's like, I'm never running cross country ever again. So,
all right, Mitch, I'll tell you who I'm rooting for in China. I'm going with Ding Changguin. Ran 226, 54 at the Chongqing Marathon. And they're going to come back 6 days later to run World Cross. I guess Alberto Stretti was the one who pointed out it was the trial for the World Championships. So, yeah, you know, if you want to run in Beijing later on in the summer, you've got to run this marathon. So why not do it? So major props to that person for getting that done. And we'll see them in 6 days after running a marathon. It's not the first time I think this has happened because I think someone pointed it out. Dina Castor ran L.A. and then World Cross pretty close to each other. And we're going to see Sarah Hall do the same exact thing. She has a blog post up on her site about how her first marathon went and now what she's kind of doing to look ahead to China and try, you know, steer the ship right before outdoor season and maybe hitting the roads this summer. But yeah, Ding Changguin. I'm going to remember that when I peruse through results and see how well they did. But I think that kind of does it for season one of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Got some special stuff for you ahead in season two. I've got something really cool planned for Boston the week before that. So stay tuned for that. Yeah, on behalf of Mitch Kastoff and Alex Lohr, who could not be with us, thanks again for listening. We're going to take next week off, but feel free to listen to previous episodes. Rate and review us on iTunes. We check out your comments. I've already read the one that says Mitch is the hot takes, Alex is the personality, and I'm just me. So I got to figure out what my thing is on this show.
You're the mediator. All right, it's necessary, Chris.
What's that?
A mediator, and it's necessary, or else we would just delve into chaos. So,
right, more chaos, season two. Check us out in 2 weeks.